talk to us now and go to the TNT Radio Interactive Live chat room at tntradio.live. Lighting the fuse for freedom. Today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
Let me introduce to you
Locked and Loaded with Rick Mudd on today's News Talk TNT Radio.
Okay, it's all good. This is Locked and Loaded. It is Thursday, the 23rd of March, 2023. I am Rick Munn. This is TNT Radio, and we are live. L-I-V-E. Also can be pronounced live or live. So we're coming at you live. We're coming at you live from Brisbane this morning, beaming out of Brisbane. It's all good. Hopefully you've enjoyed the content so far. The last hour with Natalie was very enlightening in many, many ways. We tried to cover as much ground as we have in the time that we have. And there's plenty more to come later on this hour. In about 10 minutes or so, I'll be joined by Parallel Mike, who's beaming in from Poland. He's a Brit who upsticks and left and moved to Poland to start a new life, and he's loving it out there. He's went pretty much off grid, tried to become as self-sufficient as humanly possible, and he's a bit of a whiz kid when it comes to commentating on precious metals, which should interest Darren a lot. He's very into his gold and silver hoarding, and also alternate ways to make a living, keep his head together, keep things sane. And also we're going to be talking about what's happening in Poland itself. They have a very interesting policy when it comes to migrants, illegal or legal migrants, and also the fact that they're being pulled, I would say, slowly into the Ukraine conflict as Ukraine run out of bodies to throw into the meat grinder. They're sniffing around at Poland's doors now, and there's talk, the word on the street is that they're going to be trying to use Polish soldiers in this conflict. Of course, William, old Prince William, or whatever his title is now, he's out there at the minute talking to Ukrainian refugees in Poland and also to the Polish troops. So he's in situ as we speak. He might have left by now, but he's over there doing a PR exercise. So don't be surprised if Sean Penn makes an appearance in Warsaw over the weekend and starts filming a movie about how fantastic Poland is. You know a war's imminent when Sean Penn arrives, or Angelina Jolie, or whoever the hell she is, or all these nasty, nasty D-list celebrities who have had their best days decades ago, and even their best days were crap. So I don't know. I feel quite inadequate, actually, when I look at them. I think if these monkeys can make a living of it, Sean Penn, come on, give me a break. What's Sean Penn ever done in life? You know, he married Madonna back in the 80s, something like that. There was a messy divorce. What else has he done? Okay, oh, he's been in a few movies. So what? So what? They've sucked. Name me one good Sean Penn movie. I'm actually trying to think. No, I can't think of one. Sorry about that. If you're a Sean Penn fan, tough. He sucks. But anyway, we're not here to talk about Sean Penn. A row has broke out. We talked about this with Natalie in RAF Scampton, Lincolnshire. Concerned residents meet to discuss Home Office plans to house 1,500 mostly male illegal immigrants. It's not about race. It's not about refugees. It's about legality. They're not there legally. They should not be housed. Military families also were forced from their homes as asylum seekers look set to replace them. The British government is kicking out military families from homes of another World War II base so illegal immigrants can move in. Remember this, if the British government wants you to fight in Russia, the poster on Twitter says to the British forces, you know, they're kicking your wives and your kids possibly out of their accommodation to make room for who knows who. Who knows who. But anyway, this is ongoing. They talk about it. Rishi talks. Suella talks. Boris talked. Priti Patel talked. They talk. They talk. They talk. Nothing's done. The borders haven't been closed. No one's been put on a flight to Rwanda yet. They should just put a message on social media, because all these people who are immigrants, refugees, they all have phones and they can all access Twitter by the looks of things, and they all video themselves on the dinghies. Just put a message up to say, public service announcement, if you arrive in Britain or Ireland, you have no documentation, you're not getting in, period. It doesn't matter. I don't care how you get home. You can just turn your little dinghy back and go straight back across the channel. We're not going to put you on a plane. We're not going to put you into emergency accommodation. We're not going to send you on a flight to Rwanda. We're not going to set you up in a new life. You got here, you get your own way home at your own expense. Sounds heartless and cruel, but listen, that's the only thing that's going to work. We can't afford to do this. It's bleeding us all dry. Okay, but anyway, I'm talking about the illegals here. The illegals. Aye. What else have I got? One more little nugget. No, in fact, I'm not going to give you any more nuggets. I'm going to inhale. Yes, and I'm going to let you know that we have social media presence everywhere. We're on Getter. If you use that, who uses Getter? Let's be honest. If you're on Truth Social, that's another dead duck, if you ask me. We're on Instagram, slightly more, you know, hip. We're on Facebook. Never had it. Never will. And, of course, the mighty Twitter, the old blue bird. We're on there too. So if you do use any of those platforms, feel free to look us up and follow us and retweet the stuff or repost the stuff that we post there on social media and help us to take over the world in 2023 here on TNT Radio.
Your news when you need it.
They cover the important story.
This is today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
Okay, I think we're going to be talking interest rates here, Darren. US raises interest rates despite banking turmoil. The US Central Bank has raised interest rates yet again, despite fears that the move could add to financial turmoil. Oh, not like they're trying to stir up the pot even more, is it? After a string of recent bank failures, the UK is bound to follow suit on Thursday, which is today. There is a terrible news for mortgage holders, and it is rhyming all the way with 2008. History repeating itself. You know, not 100 years. We're only talking 15 years here since 2008. It's all coming back again. That was a quick one, wasn't it?
Yeah, and that 2008 banking crisis was about 15 years from the one previous. And if you look at when these banking crises happen, they have the boom and bust cycle happens with an almost clockwork style of regularity. So yeah, the US is the Federal Reserve increased its key rate by 0.25% yesterday and said more action could be appropriate as consumer prices continue to climb. So this is in the USA. Their interest rate is now at 5%, 4.75%, 2.5%, which is almost 5% higher than it was 12 months ago. Now, 5% doesn't actually sound like that much, but actually that's an incredible hike rate. The last time interest rates increased like this was in 2008. We all know what happened then. Gold prices went up, but also mortgage repayments went up as well. So if you are a mortgage holder in the USA, you're probably feeling a bit pressurized and squeaky bit bum time in terms of your finances. But banks that have collapsed, so we've seen SVP and Signature Bank, there are a whole ream of other banks, Credit Suisse, and 168 other banks are reported to be in trouble, smaller financial institutions. One of the reasons that's being attributed to the collapse of these banks is the Fed's interest rate rises. And yet here we have had another 0.25% increase. So what's happening in the UK? Well, today, the Bank of England is expected to increase interest rates for an 11th consecutive time, following a surprise jump in the rate of rising prices. I'm not surprised, Rick. I'm looking at you. You don't look very surprised at the price increases. Food prices have gone up. Clothes prices have gone up. Fuel prices have gone down, but household energy prices have gone up. Everything is going up. And the Bank of England, who will follow the Federal Reserve's lead, are likely to increase interest rates today, probably in the same margin of like 0.25%. The ECB this week, quite quietly, I hadn't heard about it or seen it on my social media or the news sources that I look at, have also increased their interest rates this week by 0.5%. And just because I want to focus on the mortgages, here they've got a little, the BBC lovely, they have a little mortgage calculator. So if you borrowed 150 grand and you were paying 2.5% on a two-year fixed deal, and now your mortgage interest rate has gone up to 6%, then you will be paying an additional £300 per month. Massive amounts of It's an increase that most average people cannot accommodate. Excuse my pun, Rick.
Very good pun it was, too. That actually deserves a round of applause. That bloody excellent pun. That wasn't don't ask for forgiveness for that one. That was bloody good. But yes, here's the big problem. A lot of people have dodged a lot of pain and suffering in the last few years in that they've been in pretty secure jobs. They haven't been really negatively impacted financially. They've been on good wages. You know, they've got a few quid stashed away in the bank. Maybe the typical, you know, upper middle class or middle class earners. However, unemployment is coming without a shadow of a doubt. Let no one tell you otherwise. People, sadly, are going to be losing their secure jobs in numbers. Probably it'll affect a lot of older people with huge financial liabilities, like, you know, hundreds of thousands of pounds of mortgage debt, maybe car HP payments, maybe credit card bills, overdrafts to make ends meet. That loss of income coupled with the increasing interest rate rises, like twisting the knife for another 300 quid a month, twisting the knife for another 300. If your wages aren't going up, Darren, if you're not getting a pay increase to keep up with that, where's the money coming from? Especially if you're already getting it tight, you tend to dip into savings. What happens when the savings go? You need an overdraft because you want to keep the roof over your head. You can't get a second job. You've cut back as much as you can. It's a horror story waiting to happen. And I think the people that have been sitting on the sidelines, many people comfortably, are going to get a very short, sharp shock over the next 12 to 24 months, when these rates keep going up and maybe the job losses start coming. It's going to be horrific out there. And this whole 3 years, 3 weeks to flatten the curve, we're at our third anniversary of lockdown. That was only the sowing of seeds, financial devastation seeds that we're starting to see germinating now, and we'll see them blossoming even further over the next few years. There's a latency between them starting this 3 years ago and it coming to its final stage. Yeah. And that's still a way off yet, but you're starting to see the sprouts coming up above the soil now, sadly, and it's going to be a hell. It's going to be financial hell right across the board, not just in the UK.
Yep, and we've seen it happen before. Like you said, it was 15 years since the last financial crisis. And you're right, the lockdown was like an earthquake undersea. And we've had these small waves slowly getting bigger, lapping at the coasts of our financial, what we thought was our financial stability. The big tsunamis and the bigger waves are now slowly getting to our shores. There is, I don't want to say financial doom for people, but people are going to be really, really hurting in the pocket. And it is expected they are going to continue to have to increase interest rates because it's literally the only tool they've got to combat inflation, or so we are told. Now, I'm not an economist by training. I have a little bit of experience or a little bit of training in economy, but I suspect we're going to see more interest rates probably total in maybe 1.5% over the next 12 months. That's going to really, really hurt people, Rick.
It is. And, you know, it doesn't sound like much. It's 0.25% here. It's 0.5% there. When you add that to a huge mortgage of 150, 200, maybe 250 grand, that's a big amount. And in fact, it's not just happening once a year. It's happening now more and more frequently. It's a knife in, and the knife is literally getting twisted. And there's only so much of that people can take before you die financially. You die a death. And you saw it in 2008. You saw it 15 years prior to that. The formula is still the same. If you can't pay your mortgage, the bank wants the house back again. And if you're out of that house, then where are you going to go? You're going to go and try and get a house somewhere else. You're going to go to your local council. You're going to get a three-bedroom semi with you and your two kids. Forget about it. You know why? Because there's a long queue around the block and you're going to be at the back of that queue. There are going to be a lot of people there in front of you, some of whom have just arrived. My dinghy, maybe the day before. So forget about it. And this is going to fuel more anger. Remember, the world's going to be an angrier place this year. And you can see it getting angrier by the day. Not that we're angry. We're quite chilled out, actually. But gets on your gears, grinds the old gears when you see it happening, doesn't it?
Yeah. So here's some, I don't normally give financial advice, but here's a little bit of financial advice. buy yourself a dinghy. You might be able to get it at an auction at Dover. Yeah. Then sail out into the sea. Avoid some of Darren's torpedoes. Rip up your passport. Chuck it in the sea. Wade yourself back in at Dover. Say you don't know where you are, what your name is, or where you're from, and you'll be sorted and you'll be put at the front of the queue. So there's a bit of a financial advice to you. Of
a course, water taxi set yourself up as a water taxi service, you know, and you can work in partnership with what is it, Border Force, the RNLI, and the British Navy to help ferry people safely across the channel. And coin, make some coin while you're at it, because everybody's making coin out of all this people trafficking and skullduggery and illegal immigration. Notice illegal we're talking about here. But anyway, it's all good. So muchas gracias for that's a bit of Spanish for all you people out there who say I'm racist. I can speak French. Boiling. Bon voyage. I can speak Australian. G'day, mate. How are ya? I can speak all languages.
Ciao, Rick.
Ciao. Whatever that means. Chow, actually, I look at it as a Chinese word, as in chow mein, rather than chow, which is food. Italian, I think, which means goodbye. You know, yesterday we talked about squeezing limes on basmati rice, Thai jasmine rice. Today, we're talking about linguistics. Never let it be said, we don't serve up a very dad here on TNT Radio. So big thanks to you, Darren. We'll talk again tomorrow. And if there's any listeners still tuned in after that mad escapade, I'll be back after the short break with Parallel Mike. Please don't go away. This is TNT Radio.
The United States no longer respected around the globe. Is it any wonder why?
A poem, one today, says, and always one moon, like a silent drum tapping at every rooftop and every window on every of every country. Let me start this over again.
The fight to save America on the next Chris Salcedo Show on TNT Radio.
A better business tip from TNT Radio. News Talk Radio listeners are some of the most active and involved listeners of any format. TNT Radio listeners rely on TNT Radio often as their primary source of information. They trust TNT Radio and are highly engaged with the content. If you'd like more information about advertising on TNT Radio, simply fill out your details on our contact page and we'll be in touch. To find out more, go to tntradio.live.
Is this?
What the heck are you even talking about?
Freedom of speech, freedom of movement, freedom of choice, freedom of assembly, freedom of health. Our freedom.
The voice of freedom
is TNT Radio.
Yes, the voice of freedom, TNT Radio. You better believe it. It's Thursday, 23rd of March, 2023. The year is chocking along merrily. We're almost up to the end of the first quarter. I am now joined, I hope and trust and pray and believe, fingers and toes crossed, other bodily parts unable to cross them, but you get the message. Hopefully Parallel Mike is beaming in from an undisclosed bunker somewhere in deepest, darkest Poland, and we're going to talk shop. Mike, how are you, sir?
I'm very good, Rick. I'm here in the bunker. How are you?
I'm good, man. I'm good. It's, you know what, life these days is nothing if not exciting, let me just tell you that. And some of the things that you and I have discussed periodically, we're starting to see them coming to pass, okay? There was a chap I had on yesterday, a guy called Fabio Vici, who's been talking with me since last February. He analyzes geopolitics and money and financial systems and markets. And we revisited some predictions from last February and March, and they're all starting to crystallize now. And when you and I talk, we talk about a lot of things, but we tend to gravitate towards self-sufficiency and keeping your head together. And of course, money or alternatives to cash or using cash and gold and precious metals, Bitcoin or no Bitcoin, financial collapse imminent. It all looks like it's starting. The dominoes are starting to topple, Mike. The old Jenga tower looks like it's about to collapse. What do you reckon? Or are we just seeing the downside to things?
Yeah, I think we've set ourselves up for the future, Rick. We've got some careers ahead of us. Maybe some Mystic Meg in the paper. It could be Mystic Rick and Mystic Mike.
Mystic Mike.
Everything we've both been speaking about on our respective platforms is all coming true, and we're living through it. And we're just swimming. I'm just swimming along, Rick, just continuing to update people as it goes, trying to help them sort themselves out, get themselves into a place of peace and serenity whilst the world around them seems to be falling apart a little bit.
What else can we do, man? You know, you cannot change the interest rates. You can wake the whole world up if you like, but you ain't going to change the Fed reserves, what they're doing, how it's going to impact the mortgage or something like that. The only thing you can do is go along with things and prepare for things as best you can. And that's something that you advocate. And just in case I forget to do so, if you're listening in and you're not aware of who Mike is, you can follow him on Twitter at Parallel Mike, @ParallelMike at Parallel Mike on Twitter. He also has a YouTube channel that I thoroughly recommend you check out because he does live broadcasts out usually a couple of nights a week anyway, and that's at Parallel Systems on YouTube. And I notice you have launched a new project here. I just had a look at it this morning on Spotify. It's a new podcast called the Parallel Mike Podcast that you can look up on Spotify. And lastly, but not by no means leastly, you can support them also on Patreon. If you go to patreon.com/parallelsystems, the guy puts a lot of energy and time and effort into producing content and trying to help people and guide people. So if you can see fit, sacrifice a cappuccino at your local coffee chain this month and throw a few quid Mike's way and help support a brother out in Poland. What do you reckon, Mike? Is that a good promo for you right there? What?
Yeah, I appreciate it a lot, Rick. Thanks so much. Yeah, I've recently launched a new podcast because I was having a lot of trouble over on YouTube with censorship. So my channel has always had a ball and chain around it. So it's very difficult to get traction, although I do have a lot of loyal supporters. And when people come, they seem to stay. So that's one good thing. But I thought it was time to maybe separate it also, because I do go down some interesting avenues. My channel was originally about finance and getting prepared, but it turns out, I've got quite an eclectic mix. I'm a theologian by trade, ex-athlete. So I've got all kinds of things I like to ramble on about, Rick. So I thought it's time to separate the two, maybe get a censorship-free platform. And that's where the podcast came in. So it's just started. Brilliant. I had my first episode yesterday, and it was all about the dark origins of central banking. And we go all the way back to ancient Babylon and trace the roots through to Venice and then through to the modern day. And we also look at some of the belief structures of some of these people who like to play the game of banking. And let me tell you, Rick, it's not pretty.
No, it's not pretty at all. You know, they say in the Bible, the love of money is the root of all evil. You know, people make the mistake. They say the money is the root of all evil. It's not. It's the love of money is the root of all evil. At least that's what I believe anyway. And if you read that further, it says, men desiring it have pierced themselves through with many, many sorrows. It's almost like taking a dagger and stabbing yourself repeatedly with it if you can become consumed by this love for money. And I think the balance aspect is very important as well. You're not trying to make people millionaires. You're not trying to say, here's a get-rich-quick scheme that I'm advocating, Parallel Mike is advocating. No, you're simply advocating, okay, you need to be as self-sufficient as you can. You need to be sensible where you invest. You need to make sure there's a balance there of risk. You don't put all your eggs in one basket, and that you're sensible with your budgeting, living on a day-to-day basis. It's not a get-rich-quick scheme or a Ponzi scheme that you're trying to set up here like the governments have done. It's simply basic common financial sense, which we're not taught at school, by the way. Schools do not teach this to children. You might get a little bit of economics, you know, decide to do that when you hit secondary school, but this stuff isn't taught to kids, is it? Why is that, do you think? They obviously don't want us to know about stuff like this.
No, we get taught dead materialism, which is this form of living where it's about craving, it's about never feeling satisfied, it's about wanting more and more and more. And then interestingly, they pair that with a paradigm that ensures that you never have what you need anyways. So, you know, it's this ultimate craving, look at what you could have, look at, you know, it's look, here's the prize you could have won, but nobody actually wins it, or very few of us do. And what I like to talk to people about, a lot of people come to me for advice about protecting the wealth and preserving the wealth and increasing the wealth too, because I'm an investor, but I always say to people, I call it holistic wealth. And holistic wealth is deciding what kind of life you want to lead. You know, numbers on a paper doesn't make people happy. Numbers on a screen doesn't make people happy. So you need to figure out what will make you happy. And for me, it wasn't being rich, not in that sense, not in the financial sense. It was having the freedom to live a life of my choosing, to devote my time to things that are meaningful, to help people, to be closer to God and spirit, to have a good relationship with my family, to communicate well. That's what wealth is to me. And sometimes we do need to increase our financial wealth because that gives us more options. It allows us to create our life in more interesting ways. But that at some point, you've got enough. And then it's about maybe preserving wealth for the next generation, helping your family, helping your kids, or doing what we do, which is trying to support other people. You know, I'm okay over here in Poland. I'm doing okay. So I don't mind putting my time into making projects like this where I can speak to people and help people. Of course, you know, I do have to pay the bills myself, but, you know, I guess it's always having that idea of what real wealth is for you. And it shouldn't just be financial. And if it is, you've probably lost sight of life, I think.
Yeah, you know, that's a very good point that you make. If you were to do a word association game with most people and you say wealth, you know, they'll say gold, they'll say money, financial security, but it doesn't necessarily mean that. And usually, people that are rich say, oh, it's only people that are poor say that, you know, your health is your family and your health or is your wealth, all that sort of thing. But that's until they get sick themselves. That's until they're being given a terminal diagnosis. Like Steve Jobs is one person that springs to mind, the Apple guy. He had all the money in the world. He had access to all the best people in the world. But when he got sick and he was told, you've only got so long to die, the money doesn't buy you longevity, and you don't take it with you. My old granny used to say, there's no pockets in a shroud, so you don't get all your gold and diamonds buried in the casket with you, unless you're an old Egyptian pharaoh, of course. And then, of course, people like us come along and dig them up and break open the casket and run off and stick their jewels in our queen's crown, or maybe in a museum somewhere fancy in London. But yeah, your health is your wealth. So good point, Mike. It's not all just about money. Got to take a real quick ad break, and when we come back, I want to look at what's going on in Poland, because you're very well positioned to talk about this. I want to talk about the way that refugees, legitimate refugees, have been treated in Poland, and also the possibility that Poland will get sucked in to this conflict between Russia and Ukraine. It looks like it's inching that way. The seeds are being sown in the public consciousness, at least here in the UK, that's a very real possibility that Poland will enter the war forum imminently. So let's get your views on that when we come back in a minute here on TNT Radio.
Have you heard the news?
The news, the news.
Now, TNT Radio News.
This is the news.
Matt Boylan here with a look at your TNT headlines. Chinese President Xi Jinping has wrapped up his three-day state visit to Russia after signing over a dozen bilateral agreements with Moscow. Protesters have taken to the streets of Paris for the sixth night in a row as anger grows over the president's controversial pension reforms, and there are fresh warnings that the banking crisis could swallow up another 50 regional lenders in the US if appropriate steps are not taken to resolve structural issues.
On air and on the app.
I listen on the app.
Stay up to date around the clock.
I listen, therefore I know.
Today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
I'm looking at something here, Mike. When you look at the West and you compare it and contrast it with what you're seeing at least being projected about what's happening in the East towards Russia and China, you see Western society just disintegrating. You see the whole drag queen culture, the trans thing, the pronouns thing, people getting their knickers in a twist about things that got arguing and fighting. And then in contrast, you see the meeting this week between Putin and Xi Jinping, very regal, very pomp and ceremony, very serious business that these guys are conducting, but it looks like they were cozying up together. And one of the things that's come out of this is Putin has said that already 2/3 of trade between our countries is already done in rubles and yuan. We're in favor of using the Chinese yuan for settlements between Russia and the countries of Asia, Africa, and Latin America. And he always seems to make these announcements with a little wry smile on his face, does Putin. He can see the dollar in distress. He can see the movement away from dollar dependency. He can see how sanctions against Russia last year, as a first weapon that was used against them rather than diplomacy, have actually backfired spectacularly. And the West, I think, has been weakened immensely over the last 12 months, certainly, and the East, I don't think, has lost any ground. Did did we, when I say we, I mean NATO-type countries collectively shoot themselves in the foot last year when they started on sanctions with Russia?
Yeah, I think it depends on your perspective on it, because the way that I look at this is what we're seeing is the US make its moonshot bid to try and retain hegemony. And there's only one way to do that, and that's to stop this multipolar world from coming into being and enacting hegemony even further afield. So it's almost like when the Rome went from the Republic to its late days, you know, where it started, they started to essentially become a totalitarian state. The citizens suffered, and it was just pure militarism. Well, that's what happens to the US. The US has lost control now of the dollar. The dollar is on its way out no matter what. We're coming to the end of the financial system. So it makes sense if you're going to try and play your moonshot to do it whilst you can still print the money that you need to fund it, you know, and that's exactly what this is. They know the currency's got in its final day. So it's like, right, let's enact all of our worst and most wicked agendas, COVID-19, World War III, whatever it's going to be, before that happens. Because once that currency collapse happens, the US will be forced to retreat home and deal with the immense problems it's going to have back there. So I think that's why we're seeing it happen now. That's why we're in this really dangerous period. But like you said, there is a lot of things backfiring, but I don't think right now it matters too much to the US, because it's almost like they've got nothing to lose. You know, they've got a proxy force out here in Europe. We're all on the pointy end of the spear. Nobody's going to really touch America back there. They're out there kind of surrounded by water. They're pretty safe. They've got Canada at the top. I don't think they'll have problems with Mexico either. So, you know, and it's interesting, if you look back through history and American geostrategy, if you go back to the 1990s, Zbigniew Brzezinski, he said that the worst outcome for the US would be this multipolar world where you have countries like Russia, China, and Iran coming together, not out of love for one another, but out of hatred for the US. And that is exactly what has happened. So really, the US, you know, we are really in a clash of titans now. We've got this new multipolar world order and we've got the old world, and somebody's got to come out on top. It doesn't seem to me like we're going to go through this and have some kind of international agreement. So it's a very dangerous time in history.
It is. I can remember the first time we spoke on TNT. I asked you about your move from the UK across to Poland. You said, you know, well, I thought about things. I thought about moving, going somewhere that I could put my roots down, somewhere pretty stable. And I think that was sometime last year or the year before. And then, of course, in February last year, literally on your doorstep, the whole debacle started between Russia and Ukraine for reasons that we're not going to go into now. It's been done to death. However, you're sitting in situ, literally, you know, as a next door neighbor to all this. So you're seeing, at least Poland is seeing, humongous amounts of people piling into the country from Ukraine. And also now we're starting to see talk of Poland possibly engaging in this war. We're seeing Prince William, or whatever title he goes by now, he's in Poland, or was in Poland over the last few days, talking to Ukrainian refugees, talking to the Polish troops over there. Is this the beginnings of a PR exercise to start seeding into the public's consciousness that Poland has a job to play in this? Because let's face it, men are starting to become thin on the ground in Ukraine, and they need boots on the ground, because remember, they said they're never going to quit. They're not going to stop until they win the war, and they ain't going to win this war, not at least with the Ukrainian army. So what way do you see it in Poland, Mike?
Yeah, it's extremely troubling, isn't it? It's something that, yeah, I predicted this long ago. In fact, I told my wife when we discussed moving to Poland, I said, you do realize that there's a chance we'll end up in a war. Now, when it comes to Poland's history, it's very, very checkered when it comes to Russia. And that's something that I think a lot of people in the UK maybe have a basic grasp of, but probably not the full complexity of it. You know, back in 1989, when I was just a wee lad, and, you know, we had MTV back in there in America and the UK, but Poland was still under totalitarian rule of the Russians. And anyone that was brought up in the 30s will have had parents who were under totalitarianism. And it was brutal all across Eastern and Central Europe. Similarly, so I guess my point is, much of modern history of Poland has been, the identity has been fighting as underdogs against Russia, against totalitarianism. Yeah. And that's deeply rooted in the consciousness here. And even in the younger people is my point too, because their parents at least will have lived under totalitarianism. And it was a very tough life. It was nothing like what we had growing up in the UK. You know, my wife tells me what it was like when she went to the, you know, you go to the shop and there'd be a few loaves of bread kind of attitude. That's how bad it was. And, you know, if you go back even as close as 2010, in 2010, you had the Smolensk plane disaster, which was where you had, I think there was about 20 members of Polish parliament. There was the president of the country, Lech Kaczynski, his wife, the chief of staff, a load of military top brass. They were flying over to Russia to commemorate another Russian massacre against the Poles, which was the Katyn disaster, which happened in the 1940s, where 22,000 Polish military men got killed. And they were going over for the 70th anniversary to commemorate that. And the plane came down, killing all of Poland's top brass, killing the president of the country and his wife. This was in 2010. And of course, whenever a plane goes down in Russia with that many people, you know, there's a lot of conspiracy around it and saying, well, what really went on? Now, at the time, the leaders of Poland were against the EU. So this actually served the EU too, because it got rid of a lot of the anti-EU sentiment in the country and paved the way for Donald Tusk, who became president of the EU eventually, but he was also president of Poland. So when Lech Kaczynski went, it allowed him to come to power. So that actually served a lot of purposes, but it happened in Russia. Happened in Russia, that's key. Now, the current leader of Poland, the de facto leader, is his twin brother, Lech Kaczynski, the president who died in that plane crash. His twin brother is really the de facto leader of Poland, Jarosław Kaczynski. So he's got a really strong anti-Russian sentiment. It killed his brother. It killed his, his brother's wife and a load of his friends. Yeah. So all of this is really important to factor into the understanding of, as to why Poland could be very easily brought into this war, because that sentiment sits very deeply. So I just wanted to put that out there. But for us, as people in Poland and the everyday citizen, it's a tragedy. What people need here is diplomacy to stop the bloodshed, you know, stop the bloodshed for Ukraine, for Poland, for Russia, for everyone.
That is an excellent summary of the background as to why Poland could be almost the perfect player to enter the stage. Now, you've got a bad history with Russia. You're right on the doorstep. You know, the pitch could be made. Poland is under threat. If Ukraine falls, Poland could be next. The Putin war machine could roll forward. Maybe it will. Listen, anything can happen these days. But it's a horrible history that they have in the past. There's a lot of bad blood there without any shadow of a doubt. So it may not be too difficult. I suppose that's why I'm saying, are we being geared up collectively for a propaganda blitz to revisit a lot of the things that people maybe are not aware of, that you're very highlighted very well about what happened in the 30s, what happened in the 80s, the plane crash, you know, the totalitarian regimes inflicted by Russia. What better way to justify Poland coming into this conflict than to bring this all up and obviously add an extra spin on it to try and get it into the public's consciousness to support more people dying in this conflict. I think that's what they're gearing us up towards, Mike. I think it's at the doors now if Poland was to enter into the fray right now. What do you reckon?
Yeah, it may be that I become your war correspondent. I really hope that doesn't happen, but it could actually be the foreseeable future over here. So, you know, it's something that we've had to think about a lot, and, you know, all signs point to that now. You know, Poland was talking before the Ukrainian conflict of increasing its land army to 300,000 people. Now, that was the year before this actually happened. So clearly there was rumblings back then in the military as to what was going to come next. And, 300,000 people, Rick, in a country that has about 37 million is huge. You know, that's actually a percentage of the population, a small percentage, but a significant one too. So we'll see what happens. You know, like I said, I don't think America has any problems putting Poland into the war, Latvia into the war, Estonia into the war. You know, why would it matter to the US? You know, I mean, the US history has all been about sacrificing bodies for their hegemonic goals. So that's the way it's going to be. And the only thing that would have stopped this is for the EU to assert itself and maybe come up with a more tempered response. I'm not saying the EU would have had to say, we're not bothered and disinterested in what's happening, but they could have come up with a more political response. But that's not happened. So, you know, that's the state of our leadership right now. We had a room full of EU diplomats talking about this the other week. And what did they do? As soon as the Russians came, I think it was Lavrov came onto the speaker, they all walked out. You know, that's the state of diplomacy today. What happened the other day in Parliament in the UK? when Brigden was talking about COVID.
That's right.
They all walked out. You know what I mean, Rick? This isn't diplomacy. This is basically our agenda, your problem. You know, us as citizens, yeah. And that's what's happening. It's a terrible state that we're in the world to see stuff like this happening at a political level.
As grim as your words are, you're just simply telling us what happened in the past. You're looking at what's happening on the ground right now. And like the talk that we've had in the past about what happened between Russia and Ukraine, about financial collapse, about, you know, buying gold rather than keeping your money in the bank, they are starting to crystallize now. And I hope you're wrong. I hope I'm wrong. Sorry, not you. Both of us are wrong. I hope Poland don't enter into the fray. And I hope you don't become TNT's de facto Polish war correspondent. If you do, I'll see about getting you a Kevlar vest and a good blue TNT branded, a black helmet with TNT logo on the top with "Don't Shoot" on the back. Okay, so we'll do that for you if you're happy enough to brave Mother Russia and get out there with your camcorder and do a live broadcast from the front line. But I jest here. I hope it doesn't come to that. But we've got to take a break. And when we come back, let's look at a little bit of physical health, why it's important, because I know you like to keep yourself in shape, why it's important to be physically fit and strong these days. You're not so you can go out and fight the Russians barehanded with a spade, which is what we're told that they're doing at the minute. No, you're not going to be doing trench warfare, but just simply avoiding hospitals, avoiding doctors, keeping yourself as healthy as you can, and also keeping your personal finances healthy. We'll do that in the last 15 minutes of the show when we come back in 2 minutes' time. Don't go away.
Give me a minute with TNT Radio's Steve Malzberg.
When the grand jury in New York City indicts Donald Trump, history will have been made. It'll mark the first time a former U.S. president has faced such a fate. And to understand why it's happening, you need to know something about the man who's behind it all. He's Manhattan DA Alvin Bragg. Reportedly, he was elected with the backing of one George Soros. So he's, you know, one of these soft-on-crime DAs who has no trouble letting real criminals walk away. In January of last year, Bragg let it be known that he would not prosecute various crimes. Those include marijuana misdemeanors, not paying public transportation fare, resisting arrest, obstructing governmental administration in certain cases, and prostitution. The New York Post said Bragg ordered his prosecutors to downgrade felony charges in cases including armed robberies and drug dealing. But apparently Donald Trump is a greater threat to the safety of New Yorkers than armed robbers and drug dealers, because in this case, Bragg is reportedly attempting to take a misdemeanor and bump it up to a felony. Will he get away with all of this in the end? Stay tuned. Thanks for giving me a minute. I'm Steve Malzberg for TNT Radio.
Challenging the consensus and debunking the narrative. This is Viewpoint.
Exponentially increasing battery production is said to be necessary for a green transition, but this will damage economies for no genuine environmental gain. The mining and processing of metals necessary for batteries causes significant environmental damage. Acids used for water leaching in processing lithium poisons rivers. Pollution from cobalt mining is linked to birth defects. Global lithium production has more than doubled since 2016. The September 2019 World Economic Forum report forecasted a 14-fold growth in global battery demand by 2030. The ugly truth is that exponentially increasing battery production has expanded a new form of slavery. For instance, most cobalt used in batteries is sourced from the Democratic Republic of the Congo, where many mines use child labor. Mega batteries planned to store electricity from wind turbines and solar panels will make electricity unaffordable.
How's it going?
Rick Mon is locked and loaded
on today's News Talk, TNT Radio.
Okay, super happy again to be joined by Parallel Mike, beaming in from Poland. Check him out on Twitter at @parallel_Mike. And also, in fact, I hope I've got that right. I'm just quoting this from memory. Yes, my memory's good. And also his YouTube page, which is Parallel Systems, although he's porting across really to a podcast on Spotify, but you can also support him on Patreon. Please do that. Give the brother a hand out there as he's trying to do his best to keep us informed. I've been very enlightened this morning talking to you, Mike, just about even the history of Poland there. That's something I'll be listening back to as a very concise summary of why they may be the next player players in this conflict stage that we're seeing in Europe. I want to talk a little bit about the banking collapse. On this, from this perspective, okay, people read these stories and, you know, they could feel, well, I'm in the UK, I'm in Poland, I don't have any money in Silicon Valley Bank. I'm not a venture capitalist. I don't have a tech startup. I don't have loans with these people. I'm not relying on them in finance. I don't have money in Credit Suisse or any of these other big fancy banks. I just use, you know, the Polish bank or Bank of Ireland or my little local First Trust bank. What's the big deal? Why should I be worried about this, Mike? Why are you getting your knickers in a twist about Credit Suisse when you don't even have any money in there? What's the panic?
Well, the global financial system is exactly that. It's global. And if you look back throughout the past, let's say 50 years, let's go back to 1971 onwards when we really started to interlink all of the banking system, all of our pensions got put into the system. And it's as a Ponzi scheme, you have to keep putting more and more into it to keep it going. And, you know, there's been many crises throughout that time. There was the Asian crisis that started out in Asia. Nobody cared in the West, but it nearly brought down the entire financial system of the West just a few months later because it spreads through the system very quickly. And, you know, all it takes today, because the system is so fragile, is one big bank to fail. One big bank fails, and then all of a sudden the entire system fails. That's why it matters. And, you know, you can be sat there in the UK, you can be sat there in Canada or Australia or anywhere else, and something happens in a small regional bank in America. There's a regional bank, who cares? Now two regional banks have gone, now three. Now all of a sudden, the bigger banks that had contracts or trades or whatever going on with those small banks, or a hedge fund that has got lots of trades that involve those regional banks, goes bust. Well, now, where does that debt go to? Well, it gets pushed up through the system. And as it goes through the system, eventually, it gets to the big boys. And once they start to fail, the whole thing comes collapsing down. It was the same thing with the LDI crisis, right? You know, you had a few pension funds, and the next thing you know, they're saying, oh, the whole system's going to go down. And that is how fragile it is. So people have to understand any crisis right now is an existential one for this financial system. And what they're trying to do is backstop the system. So every time something fails, they say, oh, don't worry, we're going to fix it. We're going to fix it. But people need to ask themselves, how are they fixing it? Where's that money coming from, Rick? Where's it coming from? There's $2 to $4 quadrillion worth of debt in the system. $2 to $4 quadrillion. Now, you can't even fathom that number. That's like trying to imagine the size of the universe. You can't imagine it. And all of that debt exists in the ephemeral. But one day that debt has to be paid. So how do you pay unlimited, essentially, amounts of debt? Well, you print unlimited amounts of money. And that means the currency, the things that you denominate your house in, or your, if you own some land, or, you know, the bank deposits is the key one, that money is going to go to zero. That's a hyperinflation. You have to hyperinflate the currency to unlimited levels to backstop an unlimited amount of debt. And that's what they're doing. So every time they say, oh, don't worry, we've fixed it, and the taxpayers are on the hook. Yes, you are on the hook, because that's your money that's being devalued. And we're in the end game. So that devaluation now will take off like a rocket, because the whole system's so fragile that the backstopping has to happen almost monthly now. You know, the LDI crisis was a few months ago. Now we've got regional banks. Then it was Credit Suisse. This is just the way it's going to be now. So I give it 2 years, but that's not going to be a pretty 2 years, Rick. That's 2 years where we go into a hyperinflation. It's going to start with very high inflation. It'll get to 50%. And once you get past 50%, you never come back from there. That's it. Then it really takes off the following year. So I give it 2 years personally.
Interesting you talk about a hyperinflation there. This is against the backdrop of, for example, with inflation, Rishi Sunak in the UK coming out in January, I think it was January, and said, our goal is to have inflation in the UK this year. Our goal is to do A, B, C, D. Same as last week, we were given assurances. Yellen came out giving assurances. Biden give an assurance that, hey, don't worry, it's all good in the banking sector in America. Everything is tickety-boo. Like everything, Mike, you invert what you're told by the powers that be. So when they say things are good, you know they're grim. When they say things are terribly bad, you know they're going quite well. And this concept of the domino effect, I'm just trying to paint the picture here for the listeners. It doesn't matter if you're in Poland, it doesn't matter if you're living in Ireland, it doesn't matter if you're in Spain or France or Portugal or wherever you happen to be, this is a global crisis. Your bank or your institution will not remain unaffected by this. And in the past, when things like this have happened, we've had bailouts, we hear about banking bailouts. Now, there's a very sinister term being thrown around that people maybe don't quite understand what it is, but they're talking about bank bailouts. Ins. Now, for the benefit of those that have just simply heard that expression, can you give us a little very concise summary? Why should you be concerned about a bank bail-in? It sounds like a good thing, does it not? It sounds like you're being protected, that your funds are going to be protected in the bank. Something's going to be bailed in. What's being bailed in exactly?
Yeah, so bank bail-in, that first came to the fore in Cyprus. So when the Cypriot banking system started to fall apart, they decided, right, instead of getting the EU to bail them out, let's just take the money from the depositors. And they locked people out of their bank accounts. You couldn't get any money out of the cash machines. This happened overnight, bearing in mind. So people woke up, couldn't get their money out. And the next thing they knew, there was an announcement. That money in the banks, well, yeah, sorry, that's ours now. And we're going to use that to bail out the system. And then the rest of Europe thought, that's a fantastic idea. Why didn't we do this? So then all of a sudden you had the Central Bank of Europe, the Central Bank of England, the Bank of London. You also had the Federal Reserve, the Canadian Central Bank. They all got together and said, let's write that into the regulation. So the next time we have a global banking crisis, we'll take it off the depositors first, and then we'll worry about the rest of it later. So now that's in the system, and just recently it happened in Lebanon. So again, they locked people out of their dollar deposits, and they said to people, yep, sorry, we're taking that money. But don't worry, we're going to give you the local currency, which has been hyperinflated. It's like 99% of its value lost. So when it comes to the next banking crisis, make no mistake, they've already put you in line, the firing line, to go first. Now, it doesn't really matter to some degree because the currency is going to be hyperinflated anyways, but it's just that sinister and spiteful turn that they have already told you, they've already warned us. If you're taking note, Rick, and I know you are, but many people don't know this is happening. Many people have no idea what a bank bail-in is. They know about a bailout, but not a bail-in. So you're already in line to have your money taken from you in the next crisis. But don't worry, you'll get given some shares of the failing bank. So you can go away with a nice portfolio of shares.
It's going to be a shocker for a lot of people. And that's why I think what we're trying to do here, at least what I'm trying to do with you here and what you're trying to do in your own podcast, et cetera, is just educate people to what this is, what to expect, and what it would mean for you as an investor or a depositor in a certain bank. What does a bail-in mean for you? And if you know about it in advance, you may not escape it completely, but at least you can take action now before they pull the shutters down, before they issue you with crap shares, before they grab whatever you have on deposit or saved up in said bank or building society or whatever financial institution it is. So listeners, beware of the bail-in. Beware of the bail-in. And by the time it happens, I'm sorry to say, forget about running to the ATM with your little plastic card, typing your four-digit PIN in furiously and trying to withdraw 200 quid a day. It ain't happening. You're screwed. You are royally screwed. So please take action now before you do that. So you've said in the past,
I would just say as well, Rick.
Yep, go ahead.
Sorry, Rick, for interrupting. I was just going to say, say as well, if you're looking at what's happening globally and you're saying, right, I can see they're trying to set us up for central bank digital currencies. I think most people now agree with that. I can see they're trying to set us up for a QR code system. I can see that they're trying to reshape the food supply chain. So we've got to eat this chemical sludge rather than real food. If you're seeing all that and you're thinking, no, that's impossible to do. Well, no, there is one route to doing it. You take out the financial system. If you take out the financial system and the majority of people, we're talking 90%, 95% of people, do not have wealth outside that system and do not have self-sufficiency to grow their own food, to say, actually, screw you guys, I'm okay over here. I'm going to continue living my simple little life out here in the woods. Or, you know, and you are an allotment, Rick. It doesn't have to be nothing special. My farm's tiny. And the thing is, if most people don't have that, they will be forced into that system. So It's very easy to see how the financial element here lines up with their global agenda. Because if you get people stuck by taking all of their deposits, by collapsing the banking system, which is going to happen anyways, but if you can control that, if you can control that and have the next system set up to usher people in, well, nobody wants to starve to death, Rick. You know, when it gets to that stage, you're going to accept whatever you're offered. So I think
you can see
what's going on here, in my opinion.
That's the perfect, because you can resist all you like, but if you're starving to death and you've got no roof over your head, you'll take whatever's on offer. Most people will, simply to remain alive, even though it's a miserable existence. And by the way, just to wrap this one up, because we're nearly out of time, I've seen a lot of memes surfacing on the internet saying, I don't care if there's a bank bail-in because I'm broke. I don't care because I've got no money in the bank. Anyway, listen, don't think because you're skint or because you're broke that you're just going to escape this. It's not actually going to happen. It will be equally bad, if not worse for you, if you're absolutely stony broke whenever the proverbial excrement hits the fan, which it could well do over the next 12 to 24 months. So listeners, just be aware of that. Just to let you know, I've got to wrap it up right now. This is the end of the show. Mike, if you're still connected, at least audio-wise anyway, I want to appreciate you for coming on today. It was an amazing chat with you. We covered a lot of ground. Some things we didn't get to cover, we can maybe pick up at a later date. So big shout out and thanks, and locked and loaded salute to Parallel Mike in
Poland. You too, Rick. Have a great day, buddy.
You too, my friend. Have a good one. We'll stay in touch, okay? And Murray, thank you for doing a sterling job in the studio, for Natalie and for Darren. Also, epic stuff. Katie Hopkins is incoming. Pin back your ears. I'll be back again tomorrow. All being well, have a good day.